Okay. Fine with me. Go ahead.
Chair Carpenter, Chair Smith, good morning. Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storth, thank you for this opportunity. I'm Chad Herring, a Willapa Bay Policy Implementation Biologist, and I'm here today to talk about the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy. Purpose of this today, brief the Commission, give a little bit of public input that we received throughout the season. I'm going to speed through this in the interest of time, so bear with me. It's not quite what I rehearsed. So I'm going to go through a few of the key points. Adaptive management, that's right. I'm going to go through a few of the key points, talk about what we did in 2015 in terms of planning, report a little bit on what actually happened in 2015, the recreational monitoring. I'm going to really touch briefly on some of the feedback we received from the public. I'm sure we'll hear plenty of that after this is over, and talk about our 2016 implementation. We had two key elements, really, that I wanted to focus on today in terms of the policy, and that was the enhanced conservation focus and to reduce some gear conflict issues. So as part of our enhanced conservation focus, really, in 2015, we're in the implementation of the Phase 1, which is Chinook rebuilding. So we're not... Typically, Willapa Bay has not reached its escapement goals in terms of natural spawning Chinook. We're not projecting to reach those until year 16 through 21. So our management objective really in this initial rebuilding phase is a 20% harvest rate limit on Nacelle and Willapa River natural origin Chinook stocks. Within that, we wanted to look at pursuing some alternative gear in terms of the commercial fishery, and the policy sets aside inside that 20%, a 1% of those commercial impacts need to come from alternative gear as a target. And also, the Willapa River stock was population designation was switched from a stabilizing to a primary, and that initiated a hatchery production reduction from a 3.3 million down to 350K. The reduction in gear conflict would be achieved primarily through Chinook fishery management. We would have no commercial fisheries in what's considered the North Bay, areas 2T and 2U, and I think in your materials you'll see a map there to reference those areas. And we would have no commercial fisheries before September 16th in those areas. And in the South Bay, areas 2M, 2N, 2P, and 2R, no commercial fisheries until after Labor Day. Reviewing what we did in terms of 2015 planning, we had constraining stocks of fall Chinook and chum in Willapa Bay. We tried to craft our fisheries to reach those key policy elements, and we had there's some difficulty in meeting those alternative gear targets for Nacelle River Chinook. How we actually performed in 2015, our CRC estimates are not available yet for the recreational fishery, so all these harvest rates are based on historical averages. We did hear that it was extremely productive early on in the season. We do have some difficulty with that recreational fishery in terms of assessing impacts and how that applies to non-local and local stocks. And there is a need there for some additional monitoring to be able to correctly attribute those Willapa Bay impacts in terms of those harvest rate targets that we're looking at. The commercial fishery, our Chinook catch rate was much higher than expected early on in the season. We had run came in stronger than was forecasted. There could be some buildup issues in the planning model due to typically, the commercial fishery fishes much earlier in the season than we did this year, and there were some issues. Those were probably all related with the drought. We had, as you all know, a collapse of the coho run, coastwide, oceanwide. We planned in the commercial fishery to fish 27 days in the September-October timeframe. early on that was restricted due to our high rate of encounters of Chinook, and then later due to coho, we only ended up fishing a little over a third of that. And while that slide says days, really what we're talking about is openers here. And then so September and October, those were just 12-hour openers, while as of the November time frame, those were 24-hour openers. The whole November fishery was closed due to the coho collapse. So, and we also limited recreational fisheries. The bay was closed, and in terms of the freshwater, we limited areas to stay open just below the hatcheries, and they were also switched to marked selective fisheries. Chum arrived earlier than normally than what we'd see. The early part of the commercial season was non-retention, and once we got into October, we planned for retention. At that point in time, we had a hard time accessing the chum that were available without harming coho, without reaching our coho conservation targets. So we also had some issues with Chinook pre-spawn mortality in the freshwater, more than likely drought-related. The highest it was more felt in the Nacelle River stocks than it was in Nema and Willapa River, but was felt baywide. So in terms of Willapa Bay natural origin Chinook, we have a spawner escapement goal of 43-53. That wasn't really our objective to hit this year. Our objectives were the 20% harvest rate and then those 1% alternative gear targets. Preseason planning, our forecast was 38-35. Our actual run size came in a little stronger, 4,160 fish. We did not reach our spawner escapement objective, but we did reach our objectives in terms of the 20% harvest rate. We did reach the alternative gear target in Willapa, but did not reach that in Nacelle. Hatchery fish, we had a good strong run of hatchery fish, came in about a third higher than what we forecast. We met all our hatchery egg take needs. Our harvest rate, we planned 40% going into the season. Due to some of the constraints I talked about earlier, we really only fished at about a 30% rate. So for Willapa Bay coho, we had a spawner objective of 13,090 fish. Our preseason forecast was for 38,500. You see our actual was 18,112. Keep in mind that those recreational average impacts are average, and that number could go higher as we see those come in. So one thing to note here, we did meet our spawner objective, and this run wasn't Willapa Bay coho was not affected, didn't seem to be as affected as much as we saw everywhere else. We were only about 50% of run size, so, and that worked out both for naturals and for hatcheries. Our hatchery coho, we made escapement in terms of our hatchery egg take needs. Run was about 50% of what we forecasted, though. For Willapa Bay fall chum, our objective was 35,400 natural spawning chum, and also a 10% harvest rate, given that we hadn't met escapement two consecutive years or three out of five, so we were limited to a 10% harvest rate. Our preseason forecast was roughly 40,000 fish. Our actual run size ended up being about 49,000 fish, so good chum run. We met our spawner escapement goal, and once again, due to some of those constraints that I talked about earlier, our harvest rate came in at 6.8%, just due to the difficulty of being able to access those without incurring additional coho impacts. So commercial catch here, I think this is a great data slide. It's kind of a microcosm of what we saw in Willapa Bay this year. You can see for Chinook and Chum, even with those reductions in the commercial fishery, we were still pretty close to hitting what we planned pre-season. So a good indication that those were strong runs. And then you see the collapse of the coho right there. It's pretty apparent looking in those numbers. Natural origin spawner escapements. We did pretty well on the Willapa, the Palix, and the Bear. We've made improvements there. Those are pretty good numbers compared to what we've seen in the past. We still got some work to do on North and Nema system. And I just want to point out that while that Nacelle number is 483 fish, only 31% of goal, we did have about 1,000 in-stream natural origin mortalities that we counted. So without some of the environmental conditions we experienced this year, that number quite possibly would have been much higher. So we did make escapement for coho, and that's based on an in-season update model. We are just now zeroing out coho streams. As of 2 weeks ago, we still had a few reds in, and I think this week all our indexes have been zeroed out. So, and then for chum, we met our objectives there. So this is just kind of give you guys some background on what we saw for Chinook pre-spawn mortality throughout the bay. These are just females. So in Nacelle, we had about 2,300 female Chinook that died. And in Nema and Willapa, we had much lower rates of pre-spawn mortality, but these are still higher than what we would traditionally see. We had some surplusing going on in the hatcheries this year as we moved, especially from Forks Creek, from that releases of 3.3 million. We're still seeing returns off those fish. We surplused almost 16,000 Chinook total in the bay. Our five-year average is about 2,800 fish, so about five times what we would normally surplus, we surplus this year. Coho, we surplus much less. Our average there is about 23,000 fish is what we usually surplus in the five-year average, although a lot of that is driven by the return of 2014 where we surplus 66,000 fish. So, and we don't surplus many chum. So. Recreational monitoring, we initiated a little bit of recreational monitoring this year in Tokeland, and we also sent out some volunteer trip reportings. I'm going to speed through this, really. So, long story short here, this recreational monitoring that we did conduct this year gives us a tool to be able to try to work towards assessing some of those impacts for the recreational fishery. You can see in both the creel and the voluntary trip reporting, it's about a third, the ratio is about 33% of unmarked to marked fish. So, and you can see there in the kept unmarked, we might have had a little bit of an enforcement issue or an education issue in terms of what the regulations might have been. Not sure if they marked the wrong column there or if they kept some fish they shouldn't have. So some of the public feedback that we got back throughout the season in terms of the commercial fishery was that this season was not a viable fishery at all for the commercial sector, that those harvest rates should be set higher. They didn't. Coho fishery can be characterized sometimes as a boom or bust fishery, and obviously this year it was a bust, and depending on that could be problematic going forward. Did not like having access to less Chinook, and that we should increase production at all our facilities. From the recreational fishery, some of the feedback that we received is that it was a pretty good fishery. A lot of it was pretty positive. We did get some feedback that suggested maybe those the bag limits were a little too liberal. We also heard that the emergency regulations that we put in place to protect coho might have been too restrictive. We heard that by having still allowing a recreational fishery, that we might have prioritized that fishery over conservation objectives, and that better monitoring of that recreational fishery, both in the marine and the freshwater, is necessary. So moving forward into 2016, this year, we're still going to have constraining stocks in Willapa Bay or Willapa River Fall Chinook and Nacelle River Fall Chinook. We're still kind of in that penalty box, as it were, for Willapa Bay chum, so we're limited to a 10% harvest rate there. This year, we will be changing the coho escapement goal from 1390 to 13,600, and that's based on analysis from the STT, biologically based escapement goal. We will continue to work to explore more alternative gear types and try and develop some better ways to get at these fish while limiting the impacts to natural origin fish. As was discussed earlier, we're in the process of reviewing that natural origin escapement goal for Chum. We developed some in-season tools that we used for Coho and Chum this year. That worked really well. And in season, they told us that Coho was going to be low and Chum we were going to be high. And that's kind of where we ended up being. So we will continue to work on those and develop those and make them tighter. And I'd like to develop something for Chinook as well, although that may be problematic. We had a high mortality issue in nacelle hatchery in terms of fall Chinook unmarked fish, natural origin. We will address those hatchery operations and try and limit that mortality moving forward. There's some processes that we can put in place that we think will have a huge effect there in terms of those mortality if we see the same sort of mortality like we saw this year. And in June, we will be presenting a ocean ranching report. Just wanted to kind of give you guys a heads up that we had talked about we'd move that we would give that report sooner. We are moving it back to June. So that's about all I got. That was really quick and not quite what I rehearsed, so I hope it was sufficient.
Very good. Thank you, Chad. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, we'll go into the public input part of this. We do have a number of individuals that wish to provide input. So again, please stick to the time. Tim Hamilton and Alan Hollingsworth, one more time, please.
For the third and final time, Tim Hamilton, Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy. I've watched and monitored the fisheries as it went along in the policy and the plan. I want to tell you that the modeling accuracy that we've gone through is such a dramatic improvement over what it was 4 years ago when I couldn't find a fish. We tracked this thing, and I watched the staff try very significantly hard to get commercial fishing opportunity where we could. One of our biggest problems was we ran out of natural origin recruits, and they hit them really fast when they hit the water. And they couldn't keep them in the water to get to the hatchery Chinook as well as they could have because we'd exceeded our limiter of the natural origin fish. Getting to alternative gears and more selective gears would help that dramatically. All that being said, Wolf Pond, Grace Harbor are the same. Without these policies, we would have been 0-6. 4 years ago, in good faith, I can tell you, if we stayed where we were, we would have blown escapement on Chinook, Chum, and Coho. And we didn't. We actually made it. Their in-season monitoring, which was tough for them, because it's tough for the department to get out of a rut, and they're in a rut. And to make in-season adjustments, they had 50% of the Coho coming with a full-blown commercial fisheries. And guess what? We made escapement goal. We had dramatic improvements in the Chinook, in Willapaw. And if we hadn't had that doggone nacelle kick us in the rump and lost those fresh water, you bring those freshwater morts in and you bring them back up and you'll see, man, we came close to 90% in the nacelle. We haven't been there in a long, long time. This is working. You got to stay the course here, man. This is actually working. I watched Grace Harbor and Willapaw, and we got better as we got along. And the department's getting better. And I compliment them. Can I answer any questions?
We'll take your compliment, though. Thank you. Let me just see here. Heath left, right?
Yep.
Okay. Norm Reinhart, please. And Alan, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, on Willapaw, the whole basin, I'd like to see an increase in hatchery production of coho. You've cut out the commercial catch of Chinook, so we need more coho for the commercials to catch. You've
basically taken away about half of the season by the monetary value by taking the Chinook away. And also, when you do this, you need to change the runtime into the stock so you don't have all the hatchery fish coming back before the 16th of September. You need them to come back from the middle of September to the middle of October, and some there in the first 3 weeks of November. Chum salmon management time frame needs to be changed to October 20th to the 31st. Most of the early chums, probably 90% of them, are all males, which you don't. Males can spawn with more than one female, so they could be taking more males out of the first part of the run. You need better monitoring of the recreational fishery. Last year, the times that they did monitor, they averaged 18 boats per day, which to me isn't enough. And also the time of the day when the monitoring is done, you could miss a lot of the good catches because the guys come in early. The recreational limit should be two adult fish to reduce the handling of the wild Chinook. As the hatchery production drops, there's going to be more and more handling of the wild Chinook. The fixed number of wild Chinook handled in a commercial catch needs, last year, it was set at a specific absolute number, and it was around 400, I can't remember for sure, but the first fishery was about double what should be handled. The model, what should be done, it should run through the model, and it'll give you a percentage of the catch for however many days you fish. What should happen then is that number of days should stay constant. I'm having a hard time explaining this. Anyway, if the run is bigger, you catch a few more wild ones. If it's smaller, you catch a few less, but it'll still come out to your 20% of the total run. And the department didn't follow the AHA model, which stated most of the hatchery Chinook should be removed before you start implementing the wild Chinook policy 100%. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Questions? Bob Lake, please. And Norm?
Part two. I'm Norm Reinhart from the Kitsap Pogie Club. First, the policy. This is the first year of full implementation. I liked what I saw. We should stay the course. The department needs viable tools in order to manage these policies. Currently, we're looking at modifying catch record cards, reporting at least, for halibut. We should look at that also for salmon so that they have real-time numbers to work with at the end of each year, computer reporting. We need to know what the North River genetics are. Do we have a problem with the fishery in the North River? The department's got 40 samples. They're in the lab. I would ask that the lab be encouraged to expedite those samples so we have them for this North of Falcon process. We do need better in-season management. Alternative gears. I'm going to talk about a selective alternative gear method for the Lower Nacelle River for recreational fishing. It's been closed in the past because of a poor recreational effort in terms of snagging. I heard mentioned during the forecast meeting, let's implement a dip net fishery. Let's get at some of those Chinook, and let's try something different, something that isn't as destructive as a snag fishery. We need to open that lower river. Now I want to go back and talk about terminal fisheries. As I said before, we're all terminal fishermen. In Grays Harbor, with the Quinault problem, we have a NOAA and BIA problem there as well. In getting NOAA to step in and ask our tribal co-managers to negotiate in good faith, Willowbutt doesn't have that problem. But what we do have a problem with is a continued decline in wild natural stocks, not only in Willapa, in Grace Harbor, in Puget Sound, in the Queets, in the Ho. The only bright spot has been, and it's not really a bright spot, is the Columbia River. We put $1 billion, is the last figure I heard, into Columbia River stocks in trying to rebuild those returns. Quite a bit of that is hatcheries, and now they're under attack. Again, we're not getting enough fish across the bar to meet our escapement needs. They're being taken up north. So I've become sort of really radical. I have a nuclear approach that I'm thinking of, and that is if NOAA does not want to implement meaningful in-season policies in the ocean to where we're assured in the terminal areas, that is in the states of Washington, Oregon, and California, that we get adequate numbers of fish to propagate our natural returns, that we just close our hatcheries. We hit them where it hurts. They want to hit us. They want to take our fish. Why should I be paying for their fish and get nothing except a declining opportunity to harvest, not only recreationally, but commercially? Thank you.
Thank you, Norm. Francis Estella, again, and Bob.
Excuse me. My name is Bob Lake. I'm the president of the Wolf Bay Guildland Association. I gave Tammy a handout. Can you pass them out to him, please? Because I need you to follow along. But before we get to that, last year's season, we had 10 12-hour days. I've been fishing the Willow Palm on boat since 74, and this is the worst season we've ever had when there was harvestable fish, period. And out of that 10 12-hour days that we did have, I only fished 20 hours because either weather conditions or there was no fish. It's just that time period, and fish come in at certain time periods. And that's also by restricting us on the north end of the bay till September 16th, the majority of all the Chinook are gone. And then also on the south end of the bay to Labor Day, it's the same thing there. The fish are gone, so we can't catch them. They're up in the freshwater above us where we are. It's closed areas, you know. And also, one quick reminder, anytime you have a tremendous over-escapement on coho, 3 years later, you can't expect much of a run back. That's the way it's always been, let alone ocean conditions. They keep blaming it on ocean conditions, but anytime you overescape those coho, because of their life cycle in the rivers, they're in there so long, they die in the rivers before they ever get out because of lack of oxygen and lack of feed. Now, if we can go over these hatchery escapement reports, I wrote some numbers, and as far as I'm concerned, the mortality should be hooked into the surpluses. And these numbers, if you look down the lower left-hand corner, this was Thursday, February 25th, 2016. So everything is updated. This hasn't changed from the original one that came out in December. And we total, and we look at the pond morts and the total of everything, we had 19,201 surplus Chinook at all these three hatcheries. Okay? Well, why did we even raise those fish if we're not going to catch them? We did not follow the AHA model that was presented to the commission twice last year. I've seen it four times, I believe, altogether. And it seemed like the managers pick and choose what they want to use. They didn't utilize the resource. The resource went right in the toilet. And what happened? But also, on that same thing, there was over... Well, the first number I got was 6,600 Chinook was died below the weir on an A-cell, and that's been adjusted to somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000. So even if we use 5,000, we've still got 24,000 surplus Chinook that went to waste. For what? I mean, if we would have caught half of those, or even a third of them, that would have made a season for our commercial fishers. Most of the guys didn't pay their expenses for last year. That's how ridiculous it was. But look at those numbers, because those are accurate. Those are numbers from the department, right, from the hatchery people. And also, I'm going to bring up the safe area again. The people was here for a few years. We discussed safe areas, Willow Pond, Grays Harbor. What happened to that after that Kitsopper plant on the Columbia River? Where did that go, Miranda and Larry? Any questions or any response? Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Okay. Yes.
Bob, we haven't discussed the safe area in years, and we definitely did not connect it to the Kitts Harbor plan.
Excuse me, we were standing right here.
No, I mean, you and I did, but I'm talking about the department. You and I and Larry talked about the idea, but as an official matter, there was no discussion of the idea of safe area in Willapa is connected to the Kitts Harbor plan. So, you know, we can have informal conversations about the idea. I still think it's worth looking at. But I was hearing some opposition from the commercial side.
Yeah, I can add one thing.
That was the last thing I heard, is that there wasn't interest.
Yeah, one of your colleagues, Bob, told me categorically that it wouldn't work in Willapa because of the steelhead.
Steelhead?
I'm just telling you. I'll be happy to talk to you about it later.
What? They're all hatchery steelhead. That's another issue. Why did a department dump all those Chambers Creek steelhead into the three hatchery rivers? Biggest predators on Chinook fry, coho fry, there is. I mean, if you guys are picking and choosing and doing what they doggone well please without looking at the whole picture of things. This has gone to the point of ludicrous. Thank you.
Lance Gray, please, and Francis.
Commissioners, again, thank you for the opportunity one more time. I want to be positive on my comments about Willapa Bay. I want to give the staff a big hand. It was really tough. It was controversial, but they did what they had to do, and they met your conservation objectives. We already talked about this down coho here. Yeah, it didn't hit Willapa as bad, but half the fish still didn't show up. But yet, your staff made the right decisions to make sure we met the escapement on coho. I think the biggest piece of this, we have designated a new primary population, and in the first year of implementation, you hit 90% of your conservation goal on natural origin Chinook in your primary population. That's huge. We're nowhere close to that. 4 years ago, it's just a no-go. In the contributing population, they sell. Chad intimated that although we fell short, still an improvement, we probably would have made it or come very close if we didn't have the in-river mortalities. That represented like 500 hens. You bet there would have been enough natural origin fish in there to make the goal. The third thing, and I must have been looking at my cell phone at the time, but we want to get hatchery fish off the gravel. You know, we didn't get them all off. We're doing better. But the PHAS numbers are down. This is exactly what we want to happen, all right? So we're down somewhere in the neighborhood of 65% is what I heard at the meeting the other night, where that number was upwards of 90% hatchery fish on the gravel. So we're making headway there. And then the fourth one, another kudos, is on the chum. You know, it's discipline. Let's just do it. We had a very robust chum escapement by keeping the impact rate at 10% or less, and we did achieve that management goal. So just like I said for Willapa Bay, or for Grace Harbor, in Willapa, we should stay the course. Things are looking up. It's working. Thank you.
Thank you, Francis. Steve Gray, following Lance Gray. I guess you guys know each other?
Somewhat.
Okay.
My name is Lance Gray. I've got a few notes here I'm going to jump through, but the first thing I'd like to address is the Nacelle River should be changed back to a stabilizing. We've always had problems with weir issues, fish getting beyond the weir, fish spawning below the weir. We'll never be able to address that and stop that completely. We're always going to have strays. Either that or you just discontinue to raise salmon in that river. One of the things I listened to in the Grays Harbor thing was the irony of we took fish that the Indians took fish that the sport fishery thought they should take. And I thought, we had a good commercial fishery on Chinook. We took all those and gave them to the sport fishery in the Willapa. And nobody has a problem with that. But we have a problem when they took those fish and gave them to the Indians, took them. So it was a little bit of the irony I saw in that. But I think the policy, you know, once again, we're back here going through these meetings. the policy is starting to show some of its true colors. We've said it all along. We've fought all along. We're going to continue to fight for some of this stuff. That it is, I guess, from my standpoint, I look at the policy and say it's not working, but maybe it is. Maybe the policy is doing exactly what it was supposed to do, and that is to eliminate our commercial fishery. We went from $1.3 million ex vessel value to $130,000. How do you expect us to have a fishery? Well, this year's going to be worse. You're going to see them take away the salmon days we had, where the one day that we made any money, they're going to take away and move it back. So I would guess in 3 years this policy will do what it is supposed to do. I've participated in every single alternative gear type in the Columbia River that has been done. I've done beach seine. I have tried traps. I was there for the first tangletooth fishery. It takes a lot of money to build this stuff. The state of Washington paid for. The state of Oregon paid for. There's been none of that for this. You want us? I keep hearing us throw out alternative gear types. The people that have done it have sat there and said, this won't work for this reason, but we still throw it out. We still say, let's do it. Let's do this alternative gear type. There's no money sitting here to go try it. We did that on over a million fish run. We could not make money. You want us to go into a river that's got 8,000, 10,000 Chinook and try to make money at that? There's no possible way. It costs, and I'm sure you're all aware, millions of dollars to go test this gear. There's not millions of dollars for us to go test. It has to be done when the fish are at the highest number. It's not nearly as effective as gill nets. Yet the policy says we can't fish before Labor Day. So it doesn't work. There's so many things in this policy that you want us to do. Alternative gear. You can't fish alternative gears on the last quarter of this run. You have to do it in August and the first part of September. We can't do that. We brought it up at our meeting. Well, we can't do that. Policy says nothing before September 6th. There's no money to build the gear. There's no money to pay these people to go try it. We're not making any money at it. So why? You can't go do this stuff. That's the end of it. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Marlissa? Liz? And Steve?
On that. I'm involved with a lot of the stuff he's done. And I know he personally put over $40,000 into doing the alternative gear on the Columbia, and that's what he lost in that. But anyway, Steve Gray, lifetime of fishing. We could talk all day, and it would be probably informative to most of you if we did. I just want to take one area and try and explain it to you. Handling mortality. There was a study done on the Columbia River on spring salmon. It was done in April. I'll go kind of fast. Those fish went over the dam and did their thing, and they did this thing, and they came back and said there was a handling mortality of 47%. They did it with that was 8-inch gear. They did it with a 4.25-inch tangletooth gear, and they said it was 17%. Next year, National Marine Fisheries stepped in and said, no, wait a minute, you made a mistake. You have to take the control group down below Bonneville Dam, 7 miles, like you did the impact group, and release them with that. They did that. I'll be darned. It came back at, instead of 47, it came back at 45, it came back at 40. And it came back, instead of 17, it came back at 14. Immediately, you know there's a 5% impact on 8-inch gear at the dam, though on the fish can't get over it. So dams have an impact. What do we do? And the rest of the fisheries within the state and stuff, everybody pretty well accepted that's the one very expensive study. They accepted that fact. Willapa, no. We stayed with the 47 or 45%. We didn't go down to 40. 5% impact. This simply shuts our fishery down as the things that have happened. We don't get any credit in Willapa. When we go into September 15th, we fish silver gear, which is 5.25. We still use the 45% impact instead of going down to maybe not 14, but be fair. If I said we get this impact at 8-inch gear, what do we get when you get down to 4.25? We got 14%. We use 5.25. Probably should have been, honestly, 22 or 3 or 4 or 5%. Our department doesn't do that. What do we do next? We bring in 3 scientists because some individual sued the department and said, yeah, you go ahead and look at what these things yourself. You guys look at it. So they hired 3 scientists. The scientists came in, had no information, never got on a boat, never looked at the thing, did not talk to the people that have spent hundreds of hours on boats making surveys of everything that went on in our fishery. They came up and said, oh, by golly, you got grass in Willapa Bay. We're going to add 10% more to your mortality number. Where are the Chinooks? They're all in the lead line. They're not in the cork line where the grass is. Uh-oh, we heard a sport fishery say they saw a guy throw a fish overboard. When you fish in Willapaw Bay, you handle a lot of dog shark. What do you do with a dog shark? When you get it in the boat, you're going to throw it as far as you can away from your boat and net so it doesn't go right back into it. You threw the fish overboard. You didn't put it in your live box. Let's add another 10%. Pretty soon, the handling mortality in Willapaw has gone from 45 to 55 to 65. And in honesty, and you be fair with it, it's probably really about 22 to 25%. But this simply limits our fishery. What happens with those fish that went over Bonneville Dam? They go a couple hundred miles to spawn. They spend 6 to 7 months in a 70-degree Columbia River. What happens to Willapaw fish? They go about 5 to 15 miles to spawn. The Willapaw Bay has a tidal change every four times a day. The temperature is never at that level. What happens to these fish that go over dams? We have no dams in Willapaw. Do you use the same 40% for 45 is what you've used? Should that be applicable to Willapaw? Certainly not. I mean, just be fair with it. That's all we're asking you to do. Those fish spawn in 2 to 3 weeks, not 6 to 7 months. These are things that you need to stop and go back and be fair with. That's all we're asking you. And a couple of things I want to add something here, if you don't mind. Four of us worked for 8 months with BPA and Northwest Power Planning. This is back to Grays Harbor on the Indian situation there. We worked with the lease back buyback plan. BPA put up $53 million. In 8 months, we finally had this thing all agreed upon, and we were basically industry-wise passing these fish through just like we are doing in Grays Harbor. At the last second of it, the Indian tribe came up and said, the Upper River Indian tribes came back and said, you are using foregone opportunity, or we're going to use foregone opportunity. You have put these fish aside to go up and help the spawning thing. And we're going to do you've given up the foregone opportunity. We are going to harvest them. That held up. BPA took their $53 million. The whole program collapsed in the end. You couldn't stop the Indians for harvesting those fish that you gave up the foregone opportunity on.
Thank you, Steve. Bruce Ogren and Rosa.
Good morning, commissioners. Director Unsworth, thank you for an opportunity to speak today. I've been hacking and slashing on my notes, so I hope it's not too garbled, and I'm certainly going to take a swing at Alaska, just like others have today. First, I'd like to be very positive and thank you for the Willapaw Bay policy. I really think that it stepped up to the plate in 2015, and if it weren't for the unseasonally warm water in the nacelle and some in-river mortalities, we would have knocked it out of the park. 2015 promised to be the year to reverse the downward spiral on Chinook Nors in the Willapaw. For the first time in over 30 years, Chinook salmon entered the freshwater early in August and in good numbers. As you know, I am a freshwater recreational advocate, and I speak with experience and saw these fish myself. We caught the first Chinook salmon on August 1st in the North Nema. I'll bet it was only one, and there were three of us, but we were thrilled to have it. So it was really nice to see that coming back. The new Willapaw Bay policy was clearly doing its job to enhance conservation and recreational fishing. The 2015 Willapaw Bay policy has excellent guidelines to help us meet the challenges within the Willapaw and our rivers. We need to stay the course there. We do, however, need to cast our focus farther afield to include the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Our salmon allocation policies must deliver enough salmon to meet conservation escapement and provide for a meaningful recreational fishing opportunity. I strongly support this new Willapaw Bay policy. If Mother Nature had not thrown a curveball, we would have met conservation and escapement goals there. Unfavorable oceanic conditions are predicted to significantly reduce Chinook and Coho runs in the immediate year and possibly the next few years, placing the burden of conservation solely on Washington recreational fishers and Washington commercial fishers is unfair and frankly smacks of taxation without representation. The citizens of the state of Washington pay dearly for the privilege to fish, while the Alaskan commercial fisherman is the primary consumer of our salmon. The WDFW continues to collect our license fees, but forgets to tell the public that 86% of the salmon we paid to raise are harvested in Alaska and Canada. While I understand the process is complicated, I can't tolerate the idea of an ESA listing on Willapa Bay Chinook while Alaska continues to harvest our fish without significant reductions in their catch quota. I know this is complicated, and I know that this is not our immediate realm here in making these decisions and that you personally don't have the ability to do that. But I ask each of you to be influential in changing the status quo. The Alaskan representation in the PFMC outweighs our representation 12 to 2. In times of plenty, this issue went unaddressed. And while we fight among ourselves to divvy up the mere 14% allocated to us, the Alaskan fisheries pours money into its coffers with fish Washington paid for. The Washington state economy deserves as robust a commercial and recreational fishery as Alaska. I know I'm running out of time here, but I wanted to say one more thing here today is on the North Nima, when we changed the hatchery to primary Chinook production, the department systematically removed the early run of the returning coho out of the North Nima, and I'd like to see him put it back. Certainly it didn't matter in times of plenty, but now that we are having some aggregate number problems in the Willapa Bay, I'd like to have your support in getting Steve and Ron to move some early run stock from the Nacelle back into the Nima to renaturalize there. It, just a couple of years, and it would be a great jump start. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Marissa. Greg McMillan, please.
Good morning, Commissioner, Director. My name's Bruce Holgren. I'm a commercial fisherman since 1970, fished the Willapa Bay area. I'd like to, Steve Gray and Lance Gray made some very pertinent comments. I'd like to make a comment on the Willapa Bay plan. First, the current plan, as it's in effect, is going to eliminate commercial gillnet fishing as a viable opportunity if you continue on that road. If you don't have an August 26th, 27th update fishery in Willapa Bay that's been historic to determine run size, the agenda that's set forth on this Willapa Bay plan will collapse the commercial fishery. And my agenda today is maybe a little history on Willapa Bay for the commissioners. I'd like you to check out the PFMC Blue Book, and it's Table 23, B23, and it's on inside fisheries. There's 2004 I brought with me. It lists Willapa Bay Chinook, Willapa Bay Coho. Has a terminal run size on those fisheries. If you take the time frame from 1982 to 1991, when fishermen on the South Bay, the North Bay, implemented, along with the Fisheries Department, enhancing smolt, releasing those smolt in the area there, we came back with runs in 1989 and 1988, a terminal run size listed on this Blue Book page is 70,000, over 70,000 fish, Chinook, those 2 years. Also on that same page, they considered 7,900 and 7,000 natural returning fish on natural escapement. We also had a robust Chinook harvest to 33,000 fish, 27,000 fish with those numbers. This is history, proven history, the success of what Willapa Bay was. We had a director from Phil Anderson. Well, we lost our dip-in fishery, so-called, in 1994 when he became a member of the Washington Department of Fisheries. You also implemented a CHUM policy back in the 90s to have them go natural spawners. The CHUM collapsed. The CHUM collapsed, impacted our coho fishing. If you just went back to those policies that were implemented, had the help of the community from 1985 to 89, look at the history and cut down the ocean impact and allowed 50 to 70,000 returning to the terminal fishery, you'd have your escapement on natural spawners. Thank you.
Thank you. Greg, you have the last word.
About a year ago, we all showed up and started to try to make this policy as fair to everybody as we could. And we started with we were going to divide the bay. Sport, going to get the north end, commercial on the south end. That sounded like a good idea until we decided to keep the nacelle a primary instead of maybe putting it as a stabilizing. That's really hindered this whole program to work. There's been no habitat study on the nacelle to even see what the numbers can even handle. To my knowledge, I don't think there has been any today. I took part of a lot of the test fishing. You know, I've had observers on the boat last year, and we did a lot of work as far as genetic testing. And this is probably mid-September, so I'm from the 8th to the mid-September. So most of you would think that they were in-basin fish at that time. 40% of those natural fish that we encountered, they didn't even belong there. Around 40%, I'll say. So at that, I don't know. I mean, we're just throwing numbers around, you know, all these with this 40%, I mean, that's a huge number that we thought were all Willapaw fish, you know, Willapaw Basin fish. They're not there. So, I mean, I don't think we have the scientific data. We just threw this policy together just to make a couple user groups happy, or one user group happy. Because it seems like to me the only people that's happy with this policy is a recreational side. They think it's great. You know, it is really affected our livelihoods. You know, it's tough. I think the policy, yes, we did. We killed 532 females. That's females in the Nacelle River. This policy is partly to blame. We had overcrowding because we didn't harvest the excess hatchery fish. So, I mean, to say it's a complete success, and that's females. I thought we just counted them all. I mean, what are we talking here? 1,000 fish? But I don't know. So in this policy, we were the commercial was supposed to have priority of a coho. When we realized that there was going to be a problem with coho, we opted out of fishing on them, but not the recreational side. They kept fishing, and they pushed for it. Those were supposed to be our fish to see what, you know. So any impact when we're not going to make escapement is bad. I also agree with one other thing. I think we should make the Nema hatchery all coho. Cut the Chinooks out of it, make the Nema hatchery all coho like it was. It worked. That's when they have water. They don't have water early on. So, thank you.
Thank you, Greg. That brings to a conclusion the public input part. We do sincerely appreciate the time you've spent and the expertise and concern you have raised with us and brought to us. It does help us. It educates us. It informs us. So thank you all. Do you want to wind that up, Steve?
I don't have any thoughts to offer on Willapa. You know, we'll continue. We hope that the coho do show up this year so we can provide that commercial fishery as it was intended to. In terms of stepping back to the Grays Harbor side, what we'd like to do is have staff take a real hard look at what we think is coming at us in 2016, and maybe put some options together of where some flexibility might be in within the policy, implementing some adaptive management, and present some of those options on, I believe, would be the appropriate time would be the next conference call. I think the March meeting is in Moses Lake, where most folks probably can't travel to. I think it would be important for the public to have an opportunity to hear those potential options and let the commission maybe have some debate upon those. And if there's some merit to them, maybe we would implement those for 2016. But it seems like we want to be careful here what we do and do it thoughtfully and make sure that our public is having some opportunity to provide feedback for both the department and for the commission to hear. So,
comments, questions?
Thanks, Steve. I have a quick comment on the Willapa. I mean, I agree. I guess, you know, maybe just 1 year is not the time to really do much there, and we'll just see what happens next year. But I would like to put down a marker at this point. I think we need to reevaluate the nacelle and its designation. I think for a lot of the reasons that we've heard here today, you know, the ability of this hatchery to function as we assumed is, I think there's a lot of questions. I mean, I think, you know, in terms of the effectiveness of the weir and also the impact on fisheries in the South Bay. So I'm placing a marker on that. I want to really, you know, when we come back next year around this time, I would ask that we really kind of dig down and take a really good look on our designation, our policy decision, as far as designating the nacelle.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. Always open to dialogue. let's see. I took a few notes. We heard some comment about the questioning of our escapement values for nacelle and whether it was based on very current assessment of habitat productivity, I think. So when we get around to talking about it again, I'm not putting this assignment on you right now. You got North of Falcon to deal with, but maybe next year we'll look at that habitat escapement evaluation that's been called into question. And then the other one that, you know, I listened to, we had some support about changing the practices at the NEMA, production at the NEMA, coho, interest in early timed fish. And why not look at Safe Harry again? So we can line up a number of things that we might be interested in looking at all at once for the next go-round.
I have a question about the last testimony. I wasn't fast enough, but the gentleman mentioned that he had genetic testing on his boat and was finding that the fish were not of the bay. Was that going on in the South Bay that we're finding? Because it perhaps relates to this nacelle question. We're finding non-bay returns in the South Bay? And what might be the significance of that?
Yeah, so we've known that historically non-local stocks migrate into the bay at their own volition for their own reasons, and there's no predictability on what level you will see in any given year. It appears that if anchovies are thick in the bay that the non-local stocks are going to move in. But if you've got a way to predict if anchovies are going to be in the bay or not, I'd like to know. So we have tried to raise our level of management to capture enough genetic sampling in season to be able to identify whether we have non-local stocks or not. We are reducing the impacts that are attributed to the Willapa Bay fish by that percentage. So I don't know the exact numbers. Greg said it was 40%. If that was the case, we would have said that only 60% of the non-unmarked fish were, quote, Willapa Bay origin fish. So we only would count 60% of those against our target that we were shooting for there. So we are trying to improve our in-season management of the fisheries. I think you might have heard some testimony earlier this morning about how this improvements or these increased unfunded mandates are challenging to the district in terms of getting all of this work done. We have ratcheted up what the expectation is for how we manage these fisheries, and we're doing the best that we can within the district to do so. But we did account for those non-local stocks.
Of those, they're in there to feed and then will probably leave to their streams of origin? Okay.
Most of them will leave. There are some that will stray. And perhaps for folks that aren't aware, some of those non-local stocks are ESA-listed Columbia River stocks, too. So we do need to know what the impact of our fishery is on those stocks. And those stocks have to be, those ESA-listed stocks have to be modeled for, accounted for during the PFMC process to ensure that we're meeting our conservation objectives for Columbia River stocks as well. So there is a bit of a connection there between the two systems, and so it is important for us to know if we're impacting those fish at a greater rate than what we expected.
Again, Steve, I think that you heard from other commissioners too about discovering what is the real escapement goal. Now I'm talking about Grays Harbor, excuse me. We're operating under two different escapement goal figures, I believe.
No, we're operating under one.
We're operating on one. The Quinaults are operating on another. Is
right.
that right?
Well, yes and no. So,
what I'd like to do is have some further discussion around that issue, because that's key to conservation, is an accurate escapement goal. So we need to know if we're arriving at the appropriate number.
Right.
Like to know how you arrive at that. I mean, it's not inconsistent with other methodologies to arrive at escapement goals, but I want to be clear that we're using an escapement goal we're comfortable with for conservation, and then a little bit more discussion on how that impacts this penalty box element of that policy. Again, we don't need to address that now, but I think that's important to the continuation of the Grays Harbor policy, that we're comfortable with how those function.
Okay.
Thank you. I think that brings it to a close then, Steve, and we'll look forward to the continued conversation.